Welcome to Let's Locums.
This is Mark Royer. I'm a ear, nose, and throat surgeon, locum tenens physician, and today we're going to be taking an entirely different format to our regular show.
Today we are not doing a long-form interview with one amazing locum tenens provider about their locum tenens experience. Rather, we are exploring what I am calling the worst locum tenens assignment in history.
From the locums company, and you realize that that it's not the entire picture. So this was definitely not your company.
That's Dr. Priebrenner. He retired last year from the Air Force as an ENT at an obscenely high rank that was well-earned after a 20-year Air Force career. He was the first locum tenens physician I ever met, and without a doubt, the most skilled ENT surgeon I know. But even he isn't immune from experiencing a less than stellar locum tenens experience.
I was like, you know, the scab crossing like the picket line and not really a warm welcome. I'm so used to like, you know, hey, you know, very collegial. And I remember the welcome was, hey, you may be a great guy, but we don't want anything to do with you.
Oh, jeez.
I was like, wow. So awkward. And then I was like, okay, so, you know, if I see, you know, someone, you know, with a nosebleed or a facial fracture, or if I do a trach, am I signing out to you? And he was like, no.
Oh, geez. What a rough situation.
And he's like, you can.
Showing up somewhere you're not wanted with no one to change over patients to at the end of your shift is a pretty awful locums experience. But make no mistake, the story we're talking about today is much worse.
It took a whole year to put this together, because if you figure every 5 minutes we had to have 8 items.
It was real live television, real live chaos.
My first time directing that office.
This story starts about 110 years after it ended. It was 1994. I was 12 years old and living in South Bend, Indiana. At the time, the South Bend area was really having a moment. Lou Holtz was the coach of Notre Dame. The movie Rudy had just come out. And support for the local public television station had never been stronger.
And not really something that you get to do that much. Even in the early 90s, it was kind of a rarity in local TV to be able to do that kind of thing.
WNIT had been doing an annual auction for years. Thanks to a connection of a family friend, I was able to volunteer. It was absolutely thrilling. Live TV, auction items, people calling, people yelling.
Auction was 8 days of insanity.
The auction was about a month-long project. We had to shut down all of our production, and then we had armies, literal armies of volunteers.
Wait, what the hell does this have to do with the worst locum tenens assignment ever? I know that's what you're thinking. When you think of PBS, what comes to mind? Is it Bob Ross? Sesame Street? Rick Steves? Well, my time volunteering at this auction introduced me, for the first time ever, to the one, the only, documentarian great, Ken Burns.
Hey, Conan O'Brien here. Welcome to Serious Jibber Jabber. I'm sitting here with Ken Burns, who is arguably the most accomplished historical documentary filmmaker of all time. His films have won dozens of major awards, including 12 Emmys, 3 Peabodys, and he has single-handedly helped define our history as a nation. Pretty heavy introduction for you.
That is heavy.
Not bad.
Not bad.
And you're a welterweight champion. Yes.
Ken Burns is an American treasure and prolific. His documentaries include Brooklyn Bridge, The Shakers, The Statue of Liberty, Huey Long, Thomas Hart Benton, The Congress, The Civil War, Empire of the Air, Baseball, The West, Thomas Jefferson, Lewis and Clark, Frank Lloyd Wright, Jazz, Mark Twain, Horatio's Drive, The War, The Tenth Inning, The Dust Bowl, The Central Park Five, The Address, The Roosevelts, Jackie Robinson, Defying the Nazis, The Vietnam War, The Mayo Clinic, Country Music, Hemingway, Muhammad Ali, Benjamin Franklin, The U.S. and the Holocaust, The American Buffalo, and The American Revolution. That one is coming out soon, and I can't f***ing wait. Ken Burns was my first exposure to the historical documentary genre that I love to this day. He also allowed me to experience all the other great documentaries on PBS, including one I was watching late at night not too long ago, about a topic I'd never tracked before, Arctic expeditions of the 19th century, specifically the Greely Expedition.
It began as a great scientific quest.
This was not simply some new Arctic expedition.
And ended in infamy.
I much fear the horrors of our last days here. Talks of cannibalism.
An epic story of adventure and abandonment.
It would be as if we lost people.
In the middle of this documentary, a three-second mention was made of a physician who is a member of this horrendous expedition. And I had to find out more. It was shockingly hard to find information about this physician. I searched and read more about the Greely Expedition and found his name, Dr. Octave Pavy. Further research found an article called The Arctic Exploits of Octave Pavy. This article was published in 2015. It was absolutely fascinating. Using original documents, the entire life of this physician was described, including his fateful decision to sign a one-year contract to join the Greely Expedition on their scientific Arctic journey. A short-term contract to serve as a physician? That sounds a lot like locum tenens to me. Finding more information about Dr. Octave Pavy was very difficult, so I decided to reach out to the author of the paper. My first email bounced back. It was to a law firm. My second and third emails went unanswered. Turns out I was emailing the wrong people. Apologies to anybody who received an email from an ear, nose, and throat surgeon inquiring about a 19th century physician who had a really bad locum tenens experience and wanted to know more. I was down a deep rabbit hole now. Hey, baby.
Hey.
So I am working on this right now, podcast about my rabbit hole that I went down with this Octave Pavy.
Okay.
And I realized that I have kind of a lot of rabbit holes that go down.
Yes.
And I realized that's only possible thanks to you picking up some of the slack.
Oh.
When we're in clinic.
Well, that's nice of you.
But I'd kind of like to know how annoying it is.
Oh.
When I do this.
Yeah, not very annoying because I'm the beneficiary of this new fund of knowledge of whatever rabbit hole you've been down, and it keeps my life interesting.
But surely the Arctic... I wish I could say that this is the only time I've gotten sidetracked with an esoteric topic while in clinic with Allie. Unfortunately, it's not. Just listen to her. She's so damn supportive of me.
And I don't know. I thought it was really pretty interesting, actually.
How often would you say that you find me...
She doesn't even give me a hard time for seeing my patients while I was Googling the licensing requirements of a physician in 1890. And I really wish I could say that I'll reward her support by never going down a rabbit hole when we're in clinic together again. I mean, I really wish I could. But she says I keep her life interesting, right? And the thrill, the pure dopamine rush of actually finding something you're looking for in that rabbit hole is pretty awesome.
I'm Douglas Walmsley. I'm an attorney by profession. My interest has been for many years the history of polar exploration, particularly American Arctic explorers, and as it relates to sort of the untold stories of Arctic explorers researching.
It's fair to say that as healthcare providers, we have a mixed, if not antagonistic, relationship with attorneys. But I will say this, they're always there when you need them. When the shit hits the fan, or apparently, when you need more information about 19th century locum tenens physicians. Turns out my initial email to Douglas Walmsley had bounced back from the law firm because he'd retired a few years earlier. Once I found his correct email, he replied and we set up an interview. His Zoom background was everything I could have hoped for from an East Coast attorney turned primary source historian. His office was immaculate, with wooden and glass enclosed shelves and walls covered with diplomas, certifications, and original watercolorings of Arctic expedition ships and historical figures. I could almost smell the mahogany and leather-bound books. I first had the opportunity to meet you electronically when I emailed you about an article you had written about this surgeon who got the smallest mention in a PBS documentary
about something called the Greeley Expedition. And what caught my eye with this article was this specific fact that this doctor had worked what seemed like a short-term contract, almost like a locum tenens contract, and it turned out absolutely terribly. What I would love to know is, what drew you to even write this article about this doctor?
Well, it's interesting. Untold stories are sort of my real interest. And the expedition itself is fascinating, largely because it ended up as a tragic tale of disaster and cannibalism. But one of the malign characters in that story was Dr. Octave Pavey. And he didn't get along very well with his superior, Lieutenant Greeley. But I wondered whether there was a little more to Pavey than just this malign doctor who was treated, you know, at least he thought, very badly. His wife actually spent quite a number of years trying to redeem his character. And so it led me to look at his life prior to joining the expedition, and sort of what was driving his personality that led him to this relationship conflict with Greeley. And it turned out to be actually a fascinating story in and of itself.
Not willing to take the narrative of an asshole surgeon at face value, Mr. Walmsley dove deep into Dr. Pavey's backstory. Attorneys are growing on me already.
So Pavey was born in New Orleans in 1844. His father had emigrated from France and had become a successful...
Born into wealth in 1844 New Orleans, Octave Pavey studied in Paris, where he became obsessed with Arctic exploration. After failed attempts to fund his own expedition, including a wild plan to raft to the North Pole, he fled creditors and found himself penniless in Kentucky. Revived by a local physician, he married and made his way to Washington, where he joined a U.S. Arctic mission. Despite his privileged background and combative nature, Pavey insisted on staying in Greenland when his expedition ship was deemed unfit.
So while he was in Greenland, Pavey was actually very interested in learning how to survive in the Arctic. So he went on several long sledge journeys with another companion who obviously taught him the ropes, so to speak. But he did do a 700-mile sledge journey, became accomplished on his own, traveling by dog sled, did learn how to build snow huts, how to live in the Arctic, and actually learned a little bit of Inuktitut.
While in Greenland, Pavey mastered Arctic survival, from dog sledding to building snow huts, making him a prime candidate for the upcoming Greeley expedition, an ambitious U.S. mission to collect scientific data in the Arctic. At the time, the U.S. military had a severe shortage of medical officers, relying heavily on contracted civilian physicians. These contracts were typically short-term, lasting months to a year, with lower pay than commissioned officers. Contract physicians filled gaps at remote frontier outposts and expeditions like Greeley's. Pavey secured a one-year contract as an acting assistant surgeon, providing medical care but without the rank or benefits of a commissioned officer. He was recruited through Henry Howgate, the expedition's original planner, and joined the 25-man team as they sailed north. The plan was simple: establish a research station at Lady Franklin Bay and rely on supply ships for survival.
Pavey's contract was a one-year contract. So Another kind of interesting thing was, once they reached Lady Franklin Bay, was expected to stay there for at least 1 year. So the transport ship would drop them off with the supplies at what was known as Fort Conger. And the relief ship was to return a year later with additional supplies, take off any members of the expedition who may have been ill or wanted to go home. So it made sense to have at least a one-year contract from Pavey, which they could renew, you know, the following year. Now, they were very lucky that year that the Proteus, the transport ship, was able to navigate the ice of what's known as Kennedy Channel and drop off the members of the expedition and their supplies, including Pavey, at Lady Franklin Bay. And the idea was that if the relief ship didn't get there after the first year, it would get there at the summer of the second year. And if it hadn't arrived by that second year, Greeley was ordered to make his way south to, hopefully, relief, where there were supposedly some rations left for him if the relief ship couldn't make it all the way up to Lady Franklin Bay.
So our boy Pavey has secured his dream locum's job. Utilizing his training as a surgeon and his Arctic skills honed in Greenland, he's off for his dream gig. While the duration of his assignment would be uncertain, there were multiple contingencies in place for a variety of potential pitfalls. Unfortunately,
Not even Dr. Pavey was immune to the pitfall of dealing with a difficult administrator.
Greeley's this career Army officer, veteran of the Civil War, considered a New England Puritan, who had made a name for himself in these various organizational tasks, like building telegraph systems across the frontier. A stickler for rigid adherence to orders and to discipline. Smart man, but perhaps lacking in some interpersonal or social skills necessary to command men on a polar expedition. Before the transport ship, which has now dropped off Greeley and Pavey and the men, has left, there's this first breakdown between Greeley and Pavey. Pavey precipitated that first disagreement. Pavey delivers an ultimatum to Greeley that if Clay isn't sent home, Pavey would leave. The transport ship has not left yet.
Henry Clay was an inexperienced yet ambitious grandson of the famous statesman. He had joined Pavey in Greenland, but their partnership had soured. After a bitter falling out over the medical care for a local boy, Pavey demanded Greeley send Clay home when the expedition ship arrived.
Greeley's outraged. He's up here, northern Greenland. He's got no choice because Pavey's the only physician within 1,000 miles, and subordinates don't dictate orders to their commander. However, Greeley needs this physician, and he buckles under to Pavey's demand.
Pavey is essentially in the middle of his locum tenens gig orientation, and it's already off to a terrible start. This marked the beginning of a toxic relationship between Pavey and Greeley, and one that would unravel once the expedition progressed. However, once the team established their base at Lady Franklin Bay, Pavey initially thrived. He proved himself an experienced Arctic traveler, leading sledge expeditions, setting broken bones, and meticulously monitoring the men's diet to prevent scurvy, something that had doomed previous missions.
Pavey methodically checks the men's gums and the overall condition to maintain their health. Through the first winter, not one man suffers from scurvy, which is actually very commendable.
Despite his effectiveness as a physician, his abrasive personality made him a source of tension, particularly with Greeley. He ignored paperwork, failed to catalog specimens, and openly challenged leadership. As the second winter approached, Pavey grew uneasy. With no sign of a relief ship, he urged Greeley to start planning for a retreat south. But Greeley refused to listen. Determined to maintain order, Greeley prioritized discipline over flexibility, dismissing Pavey's concerns. Relations between the two deteriorated further, culminating in Greeley placing Pavey under house arrest after he refused to turn over his diary.
Basically, the two were barely talking to each other at this point. In July, we had this interesting situation that Pavey's contract is now coming up for renewal. And this time he says, I'm not signing, you know, my contract. But I will continue to take care of the members of the expedition.
So what's worse than being stranded in the Arctic, caring for starving men while in a hostile relationship with your boss? Dealing with all that while also not being paid. When the second summer passed without rescue, Greeley was forced to order the expedition south. The men, now malnourished and weak, packed into boats and struggled through the ice-choked waters. Pavey, sensing disaster, allegedly plotted a mutiny, proposing that the men declare Greeley unfit for command and return north to their base, where they at least had shelter. But no one acted on it. The retreat turned into a death march. After weeks of starvation and exposure, they reached Cape Sabine, where the rations they had counted on did not exist.
The men huddled under the overturned boats for shelter. Their stay became tragic. Over the course of nearly 9 months, through a dark, cold winter, huddled together to share body heat, 18 members slowly died of starvation.
Food theft became rampant, and Pavey himself was caught stealing from a frostbitten soldier.
Among the more egregious acts was Pavey's theft of food from Corporal Joseph Ellison, an invalid who had lost both his hands and feet to frostbite and was entirely dependent upon Pavey for his care.
Despite this, Greeley refused to take action against him, valuing his skills as a doctor even in their dire state. In the end, starvation claimed Pavey as well.
On the same day that another man was executed for food theft, Pavey died. Greeley later claimed it was from self-administered poison, though starvation seems a more likely cause. His body was left outside, eventually washing out to sea.
Relief expedition finally reached them in June. At that point, there were only seven men still alive. That included Greeley. Most of those seven were huddled in a collapsed tent, barely alive. It's been said that they had perhaps days to live if Schley hadn't arrived when he did.
The survivors were celebrated as heroes, but rumors of cannibalism soon surfaced. Greeley, despite the disastrous leadership, went on to receive the Medal of Honor. Pavey, once an ambitious Arctic explorer, became a tragic figure, a brilliant physician who could navigate the ice but could not his own ambition and arrogance. His legacy, like so many others on that doomed expedition, was lost to the frozen North. I'm curious about your take. I know your background is in law and then history, and so not necessarily in medicine, but I'm curious to know your perspective regarding this question. Are there any lessons to be learned from Dr. Pavey that you think can be applied for today's physicians?
Pavey did receive a very good education and put that medical education to good use. He was extremely well read. And that was, if you look at his diary, he mentioned, you know, narrative after narrative that he had read about Arctic expeditions. He was fully prepared to understand what members of an Arctic expedition would have contended with over particularly a long, dark winter. And he understood the need for a fresh diet. Not everyone did, even as, you know, as late as the 1870s, for example.
Edmund Burke said, "Those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it." I think the more applicable quote comes from Mark Twain, who said, "History doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme."
Being well-educated, well-read, gave him the ability to address the medical issues that he was expected to deal with as a physician.
What drew me to this story was the fact that it's such an extreme example of a locum tenens shift gone wrong. And while I don't think there's a chance of history repeating itself, i.e. your locum shift degenerates to food theft and cannibalism, I do think Dr. Brenner makes a great point that assignment details matter.
So from that, I realized that there's a lot of nuances to these locum situations, both from the provider standpoint, who's doing the locums, and from the site standpoint, who maybe have never had locums before. So experience there and having boots on the ground is always invaluable.
I do take great pride that our company, specialtylocums.com, is run by physicians. We don't have recruiters. I feel like we have a deeper understanding of the sites and what's needed for a physician to be able to provide the best care possible. However, regardless of whatever company you end up working for during your locum tenens shift, I do think there are several important questions to ask to minimize the chance of having a bad experience. Number one, always ask if you can speak with the site docs, whoever you're covering for, whoever will be taking care of your patients when you're done. Number two, request specific equipment that you need to do your job and do it well. And number three, to Mr. Ramsley's point, I think it's important to read up on any unique pathology or specific patient populations that might be present at the site you're going. Is there a particularly high incidence of trauma or communicable disease? Then familiarize yourself with the current guidelines. And you should also make sure they have a well-stocked physician lounge with plenty of food and a working HVAC system. I have many people to thank for their assistance with this episode. Dr. Allison Royer, Dr. Pryor Brenner, Dr. Alex Lanigan, Mitch Royer, Coden O'Brien, Ken Burns, WNIT, and of course, Mr. Douglas Wamsley. My entire hour-long and uncut interview with Mr. Wamsley can be found on our YouTube channel and will be dropped as a bonus episode shortly. He has several excellent and fascinating books that I'll link to in our show notes, including Big Wolf and Polar Haze. and Dr. Brenner's full interview where he discusses his experiences working locum tenens while active duty military will also be published in the near future. Let's Locums is brought to you by SpecialtyLocums.com. We are a physician-run locum tenens company specializing in specialty locum tenens. We have no recruiters and no jobs for Arctic expeditions. I do think we do an excellent job providing high-paying and high-quality locum tenens options for our premier physicians and APPs. Please like, subscribe, and share, and keep up your hard work caring for our patients. Sometimes it's thrilling and exciting, and sometimes it feels like we're stuck under the proverbial boat in the Arctic, but your work is valuable, meaningful, and appreciated. This is Mark Royer for Let's Locums.